Welcome to Sales Coaching Over Coffee, a little cup of sales wisdom brought to you by UpYourTelesales.com. Here's your host, Lynn Heide.
Welcome. Our first tip of the day comes to us from a billboard sign, quote, "Self-worth is more valuable than net worth," end quote. Which leads us to our guest today, who is here to talk about her new book, which is coming soon to a sales floor near you, Emotional Intelligence for Sales Success, Connect with Customers and Get Results. Our guest today is Colleen Stanley, the founder and president of Sales Leadership Incorporated. She's a monthly columnist for the business journals across the United States, author of Growing Great Sales Teams, and co-author of Motivational Selling. Her new book, Emotional Intelligence for Sales Success, published by Amicon, a division of American Management Association, will be released in bookstores this fall. Colleen is the creator of EI Selling, a unique and powerful sales program that integrates emotional intelligence skills and consultative selling skills. Prior to starting sales leadership, Colleen was the vice president of sales and marketing for Varsity Spirit Corporation. During her 10 years at Varsity, she increased sales from $8 to $90 million. A couple of little-known facts, just so you get to know Colleen. She's a former triathlete. She wants me to stress former. She participated in the opening ceremonies of the 1984 Olympics and made her first sale at age 6. Maybe we'll hear a little bit about that later. Her current clients that we may have heard of include Vail Resorts, Siemens Corporation, and U.S. Foods. Thank you for joining me for Sales Coaching Over Coffee on the Amazing Women of Power Radio Network, powered by Raven International. In the next hour, I hope you find at least two things that Colleen is going to share with us to take action on today so you can have better conversations and up your sales. Welcome, Colleen.
Thanks for having me, Lynn. Good to be here.
I know that when you and I talk about this book, this is going to be a great conversation for me because I'm a huge proponent that emotional intelligence has impact on sales success. You shared that the goal of the book is to show how these soft skills that, let's face it, most sales organizations don't want to talk about because they're squishy,
right,
impact the hard sales results. Let's start there. How did that come about?
Well, you know, I had the good fortune of having a couple of colleagues that are experts in emotional intelligence, Marty Lassen and Scott Helford. They own Complete Intelligence. And, you know, through our networking, just like you talked about in the intro here, they really introduced me to this idea of emotional intelligence and challenged me to start incorporating it in sales training. So the more I started studying it, the more I started realizing, wow, I think this has been the missing ingredient for bridging the knowing and doing gap. And let me give you an example. You know, most sales training firms have focused on hard selling skills, as we do. We have not eliminated those. However, without some of the soft skills, I found that salespeople wouldn't execute the hard selling skills consistently, especially under tougher selling situations. So for an example, I would see a role play being done beautifully in the classroom. You know, the meeting agenda set up, good questions asked, transitioning into all the proper selling stages. And then in those tougher selling situations with those more difficult prospects, I found that the salesperson would go into something we call fight or flight mode. They would not be applying any of their wonderful selling skills that they learned and go into a product dump, perhaps discount too quickly, or go along to get along and write up a practice proposal. So that really made me take a closer look at how could emotional intelligence build bridge this knowing and doing gap, you know, salespeople knowing what to do, and then under those tougher selling situations, not doing it.
So it sounds like we should have people start thinking really about the difference between knowing and doing, and I'll share that a woman I've done work with, Hannah Rudstrom, who is at Cornell University, talks about can't, won't, don't know how is her very simple model. And a lot of times we know how, right? We have
right.
That skill set already. but we won't do whatever it is. And it sounds like that gap there is really what emotional intelligence work fills in.
It is. And as, you know, as we found, it's that combination of soft and hard skills. So, you know, for example, to just tie in with what you said, can't, won't, or don't know how. You know, most salespeople know that when they sign up for the profession of selling, business development is going to be an important part of that. Now, there are a few organizations out there that have a really terrific lead gen program, marketing program going on. However, there's still a fair amount of sales reps that need to generate their own opportunities. So knowing that, why do salespeople still stare at empty sales pipelines? Well, one of the soft skills that can make a difference in making sure you have a robust sales pipeline that's full of qualified prospects is delayed gratification. And delayed gratification is the willingness to put in the work before you get the reward, i.e. a full sales pipeline. So what we'll see happen is that salespeople won't put in the time of planning, you know, strategy. So their calendar isn't blocked. They are pursuing the wrong opportunities because they haven't really taken the time to go, gosh, where should I be fishing? Who is my best prospect? Or if something doesn't, quote, pop right away, an opportunity isn't created right away, then they start getting a little discouraged and they fall off the business development plan, and pretty soon, sometimes they're prospecting some weeks, others times they aren't. So they know about cold calling, email prospecting, social media, networking, associations, but the real reason they're not executing the activity is that delayed gratification. They want instant gratification and are not willing to put in the work to achieve the reward of a sustainable, predictable sales pipeline. That's just one example.
And I have to say that I talk a lot about the fact that, right, salespeople in general love instant gratification. So I'm wondering if that particular piece of emotional intelligence comes up over and over and over again in the work you've been doing.
Well, I find it happens in a lot of different places. So prospecting is one, because that is just something that needs to be regarded as a process, not an event. I always crack up that in this day and age, most companies have CRM tools because they want to check on the salespeople to make sure they're doing the work. That's kind of crazy, isn't it? You signed up to do this job. That's part of the work. But another area where it can come into play is in the what we call the prospect story, asking questions, learning about their situation. So every salesperson has been told, ask questions. There are a million sales books written on it. So what's the reason the biggest complaint prospects have about salespeople is that they talk too much and present too soon? Well, part of that is when you're learning someone's story, it's not instant. You know, you've got to ask a lot of questions. You've got to be patient. You have to have the discipline. And then another soft skill called impulse control comes into play where, gosh, I heard a problem, therefore my desire is to solve it immediately versus delaying that impulse and really digging in and probing and applying my problem-solving skills. So the questioning selling stage is another area where we see delayed gratification or lack of impacting how well you learn their story and therefore how good of a recommendation do you ultimately put together for that prospect and or client.
And you and I both know that putting together the right proposal by asking questions is how you actually win that deal to that hard sales result.
Absolutely. In fact, I was recently working with a group, and you know, during our interviews to really, you know, develop the right recommendations of workshops to bring in, they kept saying, you know, we need negotiation skills training. We need negotiation skills training. And I believe in negotiation skills training, but only when you've really developed your questioning skills. Because if you study the research on good negotiators, the research shows that a good negotiator asks 2 to 3 times more questions than the average negotiator. And delaying the gratification, asking all the questions, asking the thoughtful questions takes some discipline. And it's not being willing to, gosh, I heard a pain point, now I'm going to jump to solution. So I backed this group up a little bit and said, let's make sure they've got the basic questioning skills down, listening skills, delayed gratification, then we'll elevate it to negotiation skills training.
And that's kind of how this kind of all works together, right? That hard and soft skills piece, this is another tool in your toolbox when we talk about emotional intelligence, that if you look inside yourself, you're going to know whether you need a hammer or a screwdriver.
Correct. And, you know, you bring up a really good point there. For years, we've seen people, you know, well-intended salespeople and sales managers really have a desire to grow, improve, reach their full potential. And unfortunately, their focus has only been on the hard selling skills. And what they're not doing is taking a look at perhaps the soft skills as well as the hard selling skills. So, for example, another selling stage would be called the decision stage. You know, who are the buying influences? How does the company purchase, etc.? So many times the complaint you will hear from a sales manager is, my salesperson isn't calling high enough in the organization. And Lynn, I'm sure you hear this in your work as well. So what they do is they have another org chart review, and we go over the economic buyer and the power buyer and getting sponsors and allies. All very good training, by the way. Except the root cause of not calling at the right level might be just what you indicated in your opening quote, self-regard. I don't have the confidence to be in front of the, quote, C-suite buyer. I'm a little nervous when I meet with somebody that has title or trappings. So you can do all the organization chart review, pre-call planning, but we might miss the root cause, which is, gosh, self-regard. I don't know if I'm worthy of running this appointment.
And I see that a lot, too, and what it sounds like when you're talking to the salesperson is, well, what value am I going to bring? What do I bring that's going to be worthwhile for this person to talk with me about?
And correct.
So it sounds sometimes like it's a hard skill, but it's really not.
Well, it can be that hard and soft skill because, to your point, what can I bring that's of value? Well, if you're going to bring something of value, that means you've got to do pre-call planning, which is a hard skill, requires, you know, some problem solving, and yet also it requires delayed gratification because that means I need to slow down, perhaps do some research, intentional thinking, really apply my empathy skills. What's the day in the life of this prospect or customer? So what is going to be relevant to them? So the pre-call planning is a hard skill, and yet you've got some of those soft skills of delayed gratification, empathy, understanding their world, that's going to make that appointment more meaningful. And oh, by the way, if you show up prepared, you show up confident.
And it's all kind of creating a ball within itself when we're talking, for me, that without knowing how to do something, obviously you can't get anywhere, but without believing that you can do it, you're not going to get anywhere either.
Right. And so, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of work out there on belief systems, and I'm a big proponent of it. You know, whatever you think you become, your self-talk becomes the truth. However, one of the reasons that I really found, I found this emotional intelligence bridge some of that gap is you would have people, you know, writing down the positive affirmations, I am, I will, I enjoy, and yet if they didn't understand the physiological reaction that can happen when you get into those tougher selling situations, all your good self-talk went out the window because biology 101 took over. And here's the example. You know, let's say you've been saying to yourself, I'm confident, I'm capable of having this conversation. And then you get in front of a really tough prospect that says, you know, I see 10 people like you every day. Or they immediately start saying, what's your price? Or I don't know if we need to do this with you. We can do it internally. Well, that can actually cause an emotional reaction in a part of your brain called the amygdala. And it's often referred to as the reptilian brain or the old brain. And what happens is this part of your brain is really designed for safety. It's the oldest part of your brain, and when it senses danger, it literally sends you into fight or flight. Now, what happens when you start going into fight or flight, your body starts reacting. Blood leaves the brain, goes to your external organs to help you get ready to run. This is, you know, back in prehistoric times for survival, and you are left with the functioning of a monkey because adrenaline shooting off, cortisol shooting off, and there's all that good self-talk, belief systems going out the window, because ultimately we know now that sales is a combination of art, science, and neuroscience. So, yes, the belief systems are important, and I think they can even be executed more consistently when you know that you're going to possibly have this type of reaction and then note it, respond to it appropriately.
So for anyone who is listening who doesn't have kind of a foundation in emotional intelligence, I know you've been embroiled in this for quite a while now yourself with the writing and editing process. Let's kind of take a step in that direction, because I love the quote that you just said, which is sales is a combination of art, science, and neuroscience. So we've been talking about the art, and we've been talking about the science. Talk about what emotional intelligence is on a baseline level, because part of me feels like, all right, now that you said it's your primitive brain, I'm thinking, okay, how can I change that, though, because that's just hardwired in.
Excellent point. And for many, many years, Lynn, people thought that, okay, if you were born with this attitude, behavior, skill, frankly, IQ, that is what you were stuck with. Now, more and more research, and you were seeing companies like Disney, Motorola, Honeywell, all of these folks are getting into neuromarketing as well as emotional intelligence training for their leadership teams, is they discovered the brain is a very, very powerful tool. I think all of us know that. But you actually can change your wiring because of something called neuroplasticity. And in a simple term, let me kind of explain this for your audience, is, you know, basically when you're born with about 100 million neurons, all right? And each one of these neurons has the ability to connect with another neuron, 15,000 of them, especially when you're growing up, in your growing up years. So think of 100 million neurons connecting, making these synapses. Well, one connection actually creates a neural pathway. And with repetition, reinforcement, and practice, that neural pathway over time becomes a habit. So whatever you do repeatedly becomes a habit. I think Aristotle was the one that made that quote famous. And it's kind of like weightlifting. The more you use a muscle, the stronger it becomes. So let's say, for example, you're someone that maybe needs to work on being more assertive, stating nicely what you need. Well, if you actually visualize yourself being assertive, that helps the brain make those connections over and over. And then if you practice repeatedly, pretty soon someone that has low assertiveness can actually raise their level of assertiveness. Or let's take really commoditized industries where, you know what, it's starting to become these price wars, even though the company knows they add value. So if a salesperson gets stumped and
Helena, are you still there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I sure am. Did I just cut off there?
You did.
Well, my apologies. So where did I cut off, Lynn? And I'll start over for your viewing audience or listening audience.
Let's start over where you said, okay, so commoditized industry.
Okay, so in some industries, and I call them more mature industries, say, for example, insurance, construction, those that have been around for a while, they're getting labeled as commoditized. The only reason we want to buy from you is on price, when these companies indeed add a unique value proposition. But if the salesperson under stress has not got that new habit of thinking and the prospect says to them, what's your price early on, they'll default to a product dump versus saying something like, well, are you talking about price or cost, which is a pattern interrupt response. And the prospect might say, well, what do you mean? Well, a lot of times clients buy on low price, however it ends up costing them more because of, and then they deliver their customized value proposition. So that's an example of you've really got to practice in order to be able to redirect a response that could get you stuck in a vendor call, not a partnership call.
And I think that it's important there to just note that the pattern interrupt, that question is not only doing a pattern interrupt for the prospect, but for you too, right? You're kind of stopping that
yes.
fight or flight reaction.
Yes, and in fact, pattern interrupt actually comes out of the communication model, neuro-linguistic programming, which Bandler and Grinder were the ones that really brought this to the forefront, commercialized the communication model, so to speak. And the, by mere definition, it is something to interrupt a knee-jerk reaction. So we can have that knee-jerk reaction of a fight or flight, and then we can also, if we're not careful, send some of our prospects into fight or flight by using outdated, what I call almost stupid, sales techniques. And so fight or flight works both ways, controlling your emotions, but also making sure that things you say and do during an appointment don't send your prospects into fight or flight, because they will shut down or they'll get hostile.
And what I'm kind of hearing from you, and I'm curious about how this works in the book itself, is that kind of step one is I need to work on my own emotional intelligence, but then step two sounds like it might be I need to be aware of other people's level of emotional intelligence when I'm in a sales meeting.
Correct. Called intrapersonal and interpersonal, I-N-T-R-A, I-N-T-E-R. So, for example, on the interpersonal, what we cover in the book, and, you know, the first couple chapters, we try to make sure we weren't getting too scientific because, you know, for heaven's sakes, this is we're not biology or physiology majors, but I thought it was important for the readers to understand, hey, here's why you are experiencing the emotions. And emotional intelligence, by definition, the very simplified term, is really understanding, you know, what you're feeling, why you're feeling it, and then most importantly, how it affects how you show up, and how you show up affects the actions of others. And what we have found in this very busy, busy society, you know, everybody's got blackberries and crackberries, they're all connected. Part of the reason they never really develop their emotional intelligence is they don't get enough downtime. And, you know, in today's society, downtime isn't anything a company's going to tell you to do, your friends, colleagues, but it is only in the downtime that you will get clarity of thought and purpose. How did I show up yesterday? Why did I react? Why did I not respond? And so that's one of the places that the downtime and really taking some time for reflection and introspection will help you show up better to others, which is the interpersonal skills.
Now, when we think of downtime, I think of some pretty horrible call debriefs that I've been involved with, either as a sales manager or as a salesperson, where it's almost like this immediately following critique of all of the things you did not do that they wanted you to do, you needed to do, my least favorite word, you should have done.
Right, right.
But when you're talking about downtime, you're actually talking about really kind of analyzing it a little differently than that kind of uncomfortable call debrief. So talk a little bit about ways that you see people doing that debrief.
Well, what we stress to some of our clients is say, you know what, usually when you get up in the morning, if you're like a typical person and if you've got kids, family, and all that, you're immediately rushing into your day. And we all know that sleep is a wonderful thing. I love sleep. However, I make it a purpose every morning to at least get 15 to 30 minutes of downtime. And that means it's quiet. I might be reading a non-business book, something that sets my mind in a positive attitude. And then I'll also be taking time to say, how did I show up yesterday? Reflect, did something irritate me? Did I not show up as the person I wanted to? Where am I going to be challenged today? That could be with possibly customer, prospects, peers, colleagues. And so it's in that downtime that you're creating your own self-awareness and not relying on other people always to hold up the mirror. Now, I will say this, when somebody is getting a sales call debrief, self-regard actually comes into this, because when somebody is giving you feedback, they're just simply giving you feedback on your role as a salesperson. So people with high self-regard have a good ability to separate what they do for a living from who they are. So when they're getting that feedback, high self-regard people recognize weaknesses. They also recognize their strengths. And they don't sit there and say, well, this is just the way I was born. Instead, they'll take the feedback a lot better. And therefore, you will see these people continue to grow and improve because they don't take everything so darn personally. This is just feedback on your role as a salesperson, not as a human being. You know, that gets into some character things. So I think both, if you have that downtime, you can also see where you've gotten a little defensive on feedback that was simply meant to grow you personally or professionally.
And I think that that's an interesting thing where you're talking about the fact that the downtime you're discussing is really me with myself, not someone else giving me their input.
Right. Because it's only through really self-discovery that you're going to make a decision to change or not change. And, you know, a lot of life is simply about making decisions. So we always crack up when we're working with clients. We'll put up a PowerPoint slide that says, stop setting goals. And, of course, that shocks people. And I explain, it doesn't do any good to set a goal unless you've made a decision to commit to do whatever it takes. And then in order to make a decision to do whatever it takes, you've got to really examine your why. Why do you want it? And you know what? Sometimes we don't know our why. Writing a book, it's a lot of work. You better know your why behind it, because otherwise you're not going to be willing to put in the work to write a good book that people want to read.
But of course, you know that brought up a question for me, which is, why did you write this book?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It was the power of our network. You and I both know Jill Conrath, and she introduced me to the publisher. So I would have to say that I had somebody that was, you know, encouraging me, probably in a place that maybe I would have put this book off for another year or two. And frankly, I think if we had put it off for another year or two, we would be behind the eight ball as far as being one of the first out there in the market, because I am seeing more and more people, you know, grab onto these concepts, which is good. So I would say it was the power of our network, of which you're involved, Lynn, and then also saying, okay, you know what, there's never going to be a good time. I am never going to have tons of time to write a book, and it was making that decision, ultimately, because I felt like, you know what, we're right at the forefront of this thought leadership, and if I don't write it this year, we're going to be coming in number two or three on the thought leadership place. So that was part of the reason as well.
And when people are looking, as we do, as book buyers, right, there's a million different books out there on sales, and we talked about all those books on those hard skills, the knowing side of this equation. When I'm staring at the cover of your book, either electronically or holding it physically, what do you want me to think I'm going to get out of it?
Well, I think the first thing, when people take a look at it, they might find almost this disconnect, because when you hear emotional intelligence and then you hear the word sales, often you don't put the two together because, you know, the typical perception, right or wrong, is that salespeople are self-centered, greedy, driven, abrupt, you know, all of those tales that can come out of people not being trained properly in the profession of sales. So the first thing I hope when they look at the title is that you've got these two almost opposing thoughts coming together. So I hope it intrigues people. My second goal is, and you work with salespeople every day, I find they're some of the hardest working, most well-intentioned people on the planet. However, without good training, both hard and soft skills, often they can show up to meetings and without knowing it appeared self-centered, pushy, and greedy, simply because they're not able to manage some of their emotions, they rush to solutions too quickly, they're not relaxed and comfortable asking questions and being authentic and real. So my goal is to say, hey, you guys, you can get the job done and beat that perception out there that's in the marketplace for years. And you can be an emotionally intelligent salesperson that's part of emotionally intelligent sales cultures as well. We did touch on that in the last two chapters of the book.
So the last two chapters of the book are kind of that idea of creating a emotionally intelligent sales team and sales organization?
Yes. In fact, the chapter 9 discusses, how to build an emotionally intelligent sales culture. because, you know, what I've seen happening, and just with the onset of the internet, business has changed dramatically, and the sales profession has been affected by that as well. And so, you know, back in the day, I don't think you're quite as old as me, Lynn, but that's okay. You know, you could be a Lone Ranger and just kind of, you know, do your own thing. Well, I don't think Lone Rangers work well in sales forces anymore because, you know, it's very competitive. Competition is local, regional, national, online, offline, etc. So I believe if you don't hire these collaborative people that are willing to work well with other departments, mentor the newbies on the sales team, I don't believe you can create a competitive sales environment. And also what we've seen with really good sales cultures, these folks are generous. They're generous with their time. They're generous with their money. They're generous in the community. And so I believe for the younger people coming up the ladder and looking at companies where they want to work, they're looking for companies that have that kind of an attitude and that kind of a culture. So those cultures that embrace generosity, they are lifelong learners, they're going to attract and keep the best talent going forward, which, by the way, is what it's going to take to win in a highly competitive business environment.
And I think that it's important, too, to kind of take this full circle from a book perspective. So we get a little bit about the science behind this in the first couple of chapters. Then there's a lot of working inside ourselves kind of content, a little bit of content about how to notice what's happening with other people when you're meeting with them, and then how to build a great organization. It sounds like you've covered everything.
You know, that was our goal is, you know, like you said, the first two chapters get an understanding of the art, science, and neuroscience. And then we actually went into what I call the basic selling stages, everything from prospecting to a first meeting, to decision stage to solution on, you know, how do emotional intelligence skills affect each selling stage, and then wrapping up with the culture piece there. Because I find that a lot of people that will be reading this book might be a salesperson that desires to go into a sales leadership role. So what's it take to be an effective sales leader? And, you know, some of the skills there, you've got the same names on things, but they play out different in the leadership role. So, for example, you know, if you take a good look at great leaders, and I quote John Wooden, the great basketball coach, quite a bit, is John Wooden had a phrase, and he said, manage your emotions or they will manage you. And he really worked with his basketball team as much on emotion management as he did the physicality of executing basketball plays and drills. And so when you take a look at that, you can take that best practice, and that's what you should be doing as a leader. But also it's the congruency that you show up the same way every day. So if you've got a manager that can't manage their emotions, and all of a sudden, you know, sales managers, they've got pressure coming from below, they've got pressure coming from their team, and if they're showing up harried and frazzled, you know, one day they might show up as a nice person, the next day they're Attila the Hun, and the sales team doesn't really believe or trust in that manager, and they're almost asking themselves the question, well, do we bring up a problem today? Is this a good day to bring up problems? So congruency and consistency builds trust. And when you have trust, people will, you know, follow your leadership. So lots of ways that emotional intelligence helps in those roles as well.
And that's an interesting point because I've always said that, you know, the things that make a fantastic salesperson are not necessarily the things that make a fantastic sales manager. And what I'm hearing a little bit is that, okay, if we have an emotionally intelligent salesperson, they're going to be a better manager than someone who is not an emotionally intelligent salesperson.
You know, I believe so because, you know, you can have a top sales producer, but they may not be very collaborative. They don't, you know, when they bring the sale in, they could care less how it affects other departments. You know, their attitude is, I brought it in. You guys take care of it. So they may not have something we call social responsibility, meaning, you know, I want to contribute and be a meaningful part of a group. And someone that does score higher in that particular skill, those are the ones, like I said, will mentor the new salespeople, work well with other departments, care about something other than themselves. Also, you know, the biggest thing, and you've probably seen this in your work, Lynn, where it's one thing to, you know, sell and close. It's another thing to have the ability to teach others how to sell and close. And, you know, there's a quote by Jack Welch, who's, you know, before you became a leader, success was all about yourself. When you're a leader, it's all about other people. So it's now about transferring skills, and that's, you know, reading people, and how does this person learn, and what do they need to, what do I need to say or do here? And then it's also getting back to that one we've talked about a lot today, delayed gratification. You must put in the work of teaching and coaching before you will get the reward of a masterful salesperson. So that doesn't mean just having one coaching session. That means weekly coaching sessions and then really diagnosing their sales challenges in order to help them hit their potential.
When you're looking at all of these pieces and parts, obviously they're moving pieces and parts because on any given day I might be better at one than I am at the other, depending on what's going on inside me.
Mm-hmm.
Are there ways, we touched on that idea of downtime, are there ways during the day that I can kind of work on this as well?
Yes, I think a couple things you can do during the day is, because really you're establishing a new thought and a new habits of being and doing. So for some people, I would recommend get a timer. And, you know, really driven people, we get our head down, we get going, and maybe you just have a timer, and it goes off, and for 5 minutes, you just sit and do nothing. Because the neuroscience behind that is that your brain sometimes just needs a chance to decompress, and maybe you'll lift your head up. Perhaps you have some of those good positive self-affirmations written down about how you want to show up. So you may be able to just put little timers during the day then to establish those new habits of behavior, and there will be some point where you don't even need the timer anymore. You will automatically do it. I would also say get accountability partners, you know, people that you really trust, that you know have your back and their best intention. And if you are showing up in a manner that doesn't serve you best or others best, have them call you out on it. In our chapter, we call it truth-telling or holding the mirror up. So see if you can find some folks that can point out those blind spots that all of us have and are willing enough to point those out to you so you can course correct on the spot.
And, of course, when we're talking about accountability partners, I think you mentioned this, but it bears repeating, people you trust have your best interest at heart. I think that's critical. Sometimes we pick the person, you know, in a telesales environment who happens to sit in the cube with us because it's convenient, and that person might not be the best accountability partner you can find.
Right. You know, the accountability partner actually has to be someone that you would almost desire to be like that person, because that's the only way I'm going to value their opinion. So they're actually modeling some of the behaviors, attitudes, and skills that you desire and maybe have some of but want more of. And it's interesting when you mention a cubicle environment, Lynn, because in the emotional intelligence world, they use a term called emotional contagion. And, you know, we've heard that one bad apple can spoil the whole bucket or whatever that saying is. Well, the research shows that if you are in a cubicle with a person that doesn't have a great attitude, or maybe they're just settling for mediocrity, whether you know it or not, you will pick up that emotion. And research is showing that you could have a very optimistic, positive person, and you put them in a cubicle with someone that's a little bit more negative, and give it about 2 months, and guess what? The positive person starts picking up those emotions and attitudes and starts becoming more negative. So it is really, as your mom said, choose your friends wisely. Tell me who your friends are, and I'll tell you what you like. Mm-hmm.
And as I'm huge on accountability partners just from a behaviors perspective, too, from a sales, like, accountability when we're driving to a specific thing that we want to achieve. This is really making sure that we're able to keep the inside stuff working towards those new habits we're building. And I think that's, you can't have too much support, I guess, from that.
Right. And, you know, you just made me think of something that we haven't addressed today. You know, we're talking about emotional intelligence skills, and then there's times when you can have what we call an enhanced skill. You're actually very, very good at something, and independence is one. Independence comes to mind. So a person that's independent is self-directed, sets goals, pursues those goals. Now, wonderful attribute, except sometimes there can be a cost behind having too high of a skill. So, for example, if you're really independent, you may not seek out the wisdom of others. You may not seek out accountability. And I have found that if you're not seeking out the opinion of others, as good as you may be at your position, you're still missing out on some things. And so that's actually one of my highest skills. And after studying emotional intelligence, I realized that, you know what, like it or not, sometimes I was operating as that lone ranger and not asking people for their opinion. And sometimes I didn't want their opinion because that would slow me down, for heaven's sake. So then that meant instant gratification was taking over. So that was a real interesting for me to study, that I had this, what I'd call an enhanced skill that was costing me something. So I've really made goals to get involved in. I'm involved in a CEO group, obviously involved in the Shebang group with you, and part of that is to seek the wisdom of others.
And that's an interesting idea, because I think when I work with people, I always talk about this, the idea that comes from Marcus Buckingham and the Gallup organization, that whole playing to your strengths idea. And what you're talking about is really making sure that your strength, the talent that you have, and innate ability you have, doesn't actually become a weakness.
Correct. So, for example, empathy has been documented not only by the emotional intelligence world, but just different leadership programs, that it's a wonderful skill, both in leadership and sales. However, if you have an enhanced skill of empathy, here's what can happen in sales. You feel sorry for your prospect. And sometimes you won't ask all the tough questions because you're starting to make that prospect uncomfortable. You're having them realize, here's your life, and if you don't take care of this problem, here's going to be the impact. So they can actually stop short of that. You will have people who sometimes discount when in actuality the person is just negotiating because, gosh, they're believing that, you know, it's been a tough year and we don't have the dollars, etc. So there you've got this enhanced skill that's causing you to discount too soon, too quickly, without a concession strategy. In leadership, you will sometimes take on more work because you feel sorry for your staff. Now, which is a wonderful thing, except you're the one staying there till 7 or 8 o'clock at night. So with all of the skills, there's what we call a cost-benefit. And so it's like life. You always want to have that happy medium.
And really balance it out. Make sure you're not allowing it to take over.
Exactly. I mean, assertiveness is a wonderful skill in salespeople. It will be the reason that you set expectations for next meeting, make sure all the decision makers are going to be there. However, if you're overly assertive, you can actually intimidate people. And so if you're a manager, some of your folks will go along to get along because they're a little intimidated by your style. You may go into tell mode versus develop mode because you've always got the answer instead of saying, well, what do you think? What are your ideas? So that's another skill that both from a sales can be a wonderful skill, and yet you may have prospects that get a little intimidated by you, and they'll simply say, well, yeah, why don't you put together a proposal? And they have no, they're not having any desire to do work with you other than get you out of the office, because your assertiveness is higher than theirs.
So much to think about. I'm glad you wrote a book.
Well, I'm hoping all the readers in the whole world read it, Lynn.
But all of this stuff is complex when you think about it. But I know you and your writing style from the other books that you've written. You are so down to earth as a person. I'm excited to be able to read on this kind of complex and heady subject in your style of really, hey, let's get this done, let's work on this and move forward. So,
yes, and we did try to take the headiness out of it. Because you're right, my background is, simple, grew up in rural Iowa. People there are very pragmatic. They're no nonsense. And so, my typical approach is, how do we boil this down to the simple without making it too simple? But it is a pragmatic approach. And most of the examples, we've got case studies in there. We've got action steps for people to say, hey, do these two or three things in order to actually increase what you call the how-to. So I don't think they'll find this over their head at all.
One of my big things on the show is always to make sure that no matter what we're talking about, people have a couple of things that they can do today, because I'm a big believer in taking action today. And I have one that I'm going to throw out that I'm going to do that I know I've fallen off on, which is taking that downtime during the day. So I am going to share with all of the listeners that I am going to use a timer, and I'm actually going to give myself some downtime 3 times during the day where I get up and I walk away. And again, we're not talking about taking an hour, right? I'm not taking 3 hours out of my day, but I'm going to take 10 minutes, 3 10-minute breaks where I just let my brain go.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's where, and you know what you'll find? I bet everyone listening has had this good night of sleep, and they woke up and they go, oh my gosh, the problem I was worried about yesterday, I've got 3 ideas or solutions. Well, guess what? It's in the downtime that you get this clarity, you get this creativity. And, Daniel Pink, in his book, A Whole New Mind, discusses how the, quote, right-brainers of the world are going to rule, because it's really the right-brainers that are able to take this dot and then connect it with this dot over here, and that's going to create innovation and new ways of thinking and doing things better for your customers and prospects. But it can only happen when you've got some of that downtime and you're not so scheduled and so connected to every darn device out there. And, I am going to caution people. Probably as they read the book, they'll think I'm anti-technology, and I am not. I am just for smart technology, because I do think in this day and age, I make a joke that salespeople are so busy checking everything, they never have the time to do anything. They've got their text, they've got their smartphone voicemails, they've got their office voicemail, they've got their office emails, they've got, tons of places that they're checking in, and it makes me wonder, do they ever have any time just to be and do?
And that's interesting. There's a book called The Myth of Multitasking by Dave Crenshaw, which I'm a believer in, which that goes to that idea where if you're checking on thousands of different things, you can't get focused and complete anything even.
Well, and that goes back to the neuroscience. So one of the things we discuss in the book is that, if you are committed to becoming masterful, this is where sometimes you can learn the why behind learning. Well, the fact of the matter is the prefrontal cortex is where learning takes place. And it can truly only manage one thought at a time. So if you're trying to be in a sales training class, listening to this phone call, and you really want to absorb the information, you need to make a decision and focus on where you want to be. So we explain this to a lot of our clients before we start a sales training workshop. We're going to ask you to turn off your technology. And companies have gotten into this horrible habit of allowing emails and people instant messaging, thinking that, okay, people can multitask. They can't. It's biology 101. So if companies are intentional about having meetings that are productive, get people to make a decision. Where do you need to be? Where do you want to be? If you're investing in training, make a decision. And the world really doesn't fall apart if you haven't checked it in an hour and a half. And so we've gotten into this kind of weird culture that we think we always need to be connected. And I always ask my clients to document every email that they thought they needed to answer during that hour and a half and could it have waited, and then you apply a good time management principle doing like-minded tasks at one time. And most of them aren't having babies or doing neurosurgery, so they agree with me. And what I mean by the having babies, they're not OBGYNs. I give my clients a hard time. Are you guys OBGYNs? Okay, turn off those phones. So, but I'm not against technology. I'm for smart technology and make it work for you and getting you the results that you want.
And I think that that's the important thing, right? Managing it rather than letting it manage you.
Yes, yes. And that really has made an impact for what I see, intentional thinking, thoughtful thoughtful work and then learning. And if you're really desiring to change, well, that's probably going to require some learning new skills, techniques, and attitudes. And if you're all over the place, the fact of the matter is you're just not going to learn it as quickly.
Well, we are coming up on the end of our hour together, Colleen. I can't believe we've been... Actually, I can believe you, and I can chit-chat for an hour without any problem at all. But I'm wondering, as we're winding down, what would your one thing be that you practice about emotional intelligence every day?
You know, Lynn, I would have to say it's the one you've made a commitment to. And mine is that downtime in the morning. And as I said, there's some mornings I have to get up early to get it done. Maybe getting up at a quarter of five to make sure I've got my cup of coffee and everything by 5 o'clock, because I have found it's made a tremendous difference in my showing up as the person I want to be, perhaps thinking about new skills that I need to learn, new habits that I am seeking to make permanent. So a habit is anything you do repeatedly and you don't have to think about it. So I would have to say that has been my biggest practice that's made a difference in my personal and professional life.
Great. Well, again, the name of the book is Emotional Intelligence for Sales Success: Connect with Customers and Get Results. Coming to a sales floor near you soon. And that is going to wrap up another edition of Sales Coaching Over Coffee. Now it's time to go take action on at least two things that you heard today and they were new, or you're reminded they're important to your own sales success. So let's go sell more and sell more often. And always remember, if you're having any trouble getting into action, give me a call and I'll either connect you with Colleen or we'll work together to transfer those new ideas into good sales habits. Thanks for joining me today on Sales Coaching Over Coffee. I'm your host, Lynn Heide. Join us next Thursday at noon Central Time for another sip of sales wisdom on the amazing Women of Power radio network, powered by Raven International.
And that, ladies and gents, is the UpYourTelesales.com signal to go out, try something new, and brew up an extraordinary week. Hey, this cool voiceover was created especially for UpYourTelesales.com by Ashley Cox. Hey, that's me.
Me too.